This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell.
Noah Ovshinsky joins us in the studio for his weekly roundup of the top news in Wisconsin. We've got big job numbers and some legal documents to talk about today. Hey, Noah.
Hey, good afternoon and happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. Well, the big story, a bit of a bombshell dropped yesterday. These documents released in the what's being called the John Doe 2 investigation. First, the story so far, what are the basics on these documents, the hundreds of pages of them?
Yeah, and as a quick recap, this is an investigation that's been going on for about 2 years. And this is really the first time we've gotten an in-depth look at what the prosecutors are actually accusing or were accusing in the investigation. And they clearly say, alleging that Governor Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass Wisconsin election laws, both in 2011 and 2012, which, as you might recall, were during the recall elections. And the laws in question generally have to do with, you know, the coordination between candidates and outside groups and the kinds of ads and things that those outside groups can run.
And coordinating fundraising efforts and that sort of thing.
Exactly, right, exactly.
So what have we heard from the governor since all this came out yesterday?
So since those documents were unsealed, the governor has really been on the offensive. He hasn't backed out of any public appearances. In fact, he's made himself available to the media at those events to take questions on this controversy. He appeared on Fox and Friends this morning. His campaign has issued press releases countering the allegations contained in the court documents. In fact, a release was sent out announcing a new campaign ad attacking Mary Burke, for things unrelated to the John Doe investigation, but nonetheless, turning up heat on the Burke campaign at this time. And also this morning, his campaign released a column authored by the governor that criticizes the media coverage of the John Doe investigation since these documents were released.
So a lot of mediums there, but what's the message? What's the governor saying for the most part about this?
The governor says in very clear language that the allegations are false and that they are politically motivated. One of the first things he's pointed out is that, you know, he was never charged during the course of the investigation. And he's quick to note that the two judges, one at the state level and one at the federal level, both have found that there was not enough evidence of wrongdoing to both, pursue subpoenas and felt that there was no evidence to support the investigation. And in fact, one of those judges has suspended that investigation because of that lack of evidence of wrongdoing.
And you just showed me before we came back on the air, one of the judges you just mentioned has responded to the release of these documents now.
Yeah, Judge Rudolph Randa, who was actually the judge, the federal judge, who suspended the investigation several weeks ago, actually issued an order really strongly criticizing the prosecutors in the investigation for not opposing the unsealing of these additional court documents. He goes on to say in the order that the defendants, in this case the defendants are the prosecutors, mm-hmm. By their position appear to seek refuge in the court of public opinion, having lost in this court on the law. So clearly the judge is implying that the prosecutors weren't fighting the release of these documents because they thought that, it would get the truth out there or something like that.
And as I understand it, for Judge Easterbrook to release these, the prosecutors had to agree and the conservative outside group that was trying to get the investigation stopped also agreed to the release of these documents. I may have that wrong.
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not 100% on that. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I find it very interesting that the judge in this case, in the lawsuit that ended with the suspension of this investigation, mm-hmm. I find it very interesting that he issued an order not long after these documents were released, actually criticizing the prosecutors for not fighting their release.
And have we heard anything from the prosecutors themselves since these came out?
Of course, there's a chance that this investigation could restart mm-hmm. If the Court of Appeals allows it to. And so the prosecutors are keeping a low profile. Obviously, they don't want to, contaminate the investigation if it restarts. It also, I think, bears acknowledging that during the course of, I think, the almost 2 year history of this investigation, I can't remember the prosecutors actually ever commenting publicly on it because of, the confidential nature of a John Doe investigation. So to me, and I think probably to most people, it's not surprising that they're remaining quiet right now.
Well, I mentioned this to our reporter Chuck Kornbach yesterday. This is, as you say, or has been, a confidential investigation. If the appeals court allows it to continue, it's a lot less confidential now that all these documents are out there.
Exactly. I mean, right now, we have the basis of the allegations, at least the allegations as the prosecutors see them. They're out in the public. You know, where that investigation goes, if in fact it is restarted, who's to say? But certainly it's a lot murkier now that this information is out there.
And two judges, I think the governor had mentioned, took action to quash subpoenas, suspend the investigation. Has that been the only word so far on this?
There was one other judge involved in this case who actually did think there was enough evidence to issue subpoenas in the first place during the course of this investigation. So, you know, at the judicial level, there is some disagreement, you know, as to whether or not there is evidence of wrongdoing.
Well, we leave a lot of these stories here. We'll see what the next court up decides about how this moves forward.
Right now, it's in the Court of Appeals in Chicago.
So other big news yesterday got a little overshadowed, I think, by this one, but some new job numbers. These are the ones that people look at as the more solid ones, right?
Right. These job numbers are they're actually technically called the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages, which is a very technical name. But this is considered to be the gold standard of employment data, the most rock solid numbers we have that look at unemployment and employment in the state of Wisconsin. And what this data, which was released yesterday, showed was that Wisconsin ranked 37th in the nation in 2013 in private sector growth.
And this takes us to the end of 2013. Yeah. Part of the reason these numbers are so good is that they take time to compile.
Exactly. It takes several months. That's why we're getting them now in June, even though they cover all of 2013. That number, 37th in the nation, you know, that's far below the 1.2% growth that Wisconsin saw is far below the national average and puts us nearly dead last among our Midwest neighbors. I think only Illinois posted worse numbers than Wisconsin.
I remember leading up to the recall election, we were watching those monthly numbers, which I think most people agreed aren't as reliable. And yet we spent a lot of time talking about them. They were a big election issue. These quarterly numbers, going to be a big election issue this year?
Absolutely, because again, this looks at three years of Governor Walker's term. And again, these are the gold standard numbers. So this gives us a very clear idea of how far the governor has gone in creating what he promised to create, which was 250,000 new jobs in his first term.
There's always the question, how much do governors really have control over how many jobs get created in their state?
Yeah, I mean, economists argue that governors can actually do very little to affect a job creation. So, you know, if that's in fact true, you know, it's unclear what these numbers actually say about Governor Walker's stewardship of the economy. But they do present a political problem. As I mentioned, you know, he committed to helping the state create 250,000 new jobs in his first term. And this kind of job growth is nowhere near that.
This is an issue I know you and the news department are going to be tracking pretty heavily between now and November.
Yeah, and as you'll hear coming up on the show, actually, Sean Johnson crunched the numbers for his series that ends today that's been looking at some of the promises Governor Walker made in his 2010 campaign. And it's clear that at this rate, it's going to be a while before the state adds that 250,000 new jobs.
Well, a little time for another issue. There's been a lot of talk lately about how we transport oil, natural gas, with the fracking boom, natural gas boom. Something I didn't know about, there's talk about an older, already existing pipeline. Now, what's the story?
Yeah, so a group of U.S. and Canadian citizens that advises the Great Lakes Fishery Commission has recommended that Enbridge, the pipeline company, replace one of their pipelines that runs under the Mackinac Straits. And if you don't know your geography, the Mackinac Straits are where Lakes Michigan and Huron actually meet.
Mm-hmm. And where the two peninsulas of Michigan are separated by a little bit of water there. Who are these advisors? Who are the stakeholders here?
Yeah, these advisors represent a range of stakeholders, really. Charter fishermen, commercial fishermen, government officials, citizens. And they argue that this, you know, 60-year-old pipeline is at risk of failing and could create an environmental disaster in an especially sensitive area.
Any particular reason to worry about it now, this time of year?
Well, it's sensitive because at this particular point, you know, the currents are very, very strong in that area if you've ever been there. I mean, they are incredibly strong. And any spill could move quickly and farther than what might normally happen in calm waters.
So this isn't right off of Wisconsin, but could it affect Wisconsin in the event of a spill? Is that part of the concern?
Absolutely. Again, this is where Lakes Michigan and Lake Huron meet. And of course, we have an entire coastline on Lake Michigan. So certainly relevant to Wisconsin.
And what's the disagreement, I guess, from the company?
Well, Enbridge argues the pipeline is safe and that there is no sign it needs repairs or replacement. The company also says that if there happened to be a spill, that it would be quickly contained by the company.
And I guess this company has some track record with a spill?
There are a lot of people who are skeptical of claims like that, you know, that these spills can be quickly contained, especially coming from Enbridge. The company was heavily criticized for its cleanup efforts after the pipeline rupture in, I think it was 2010, which led to crude oil spilling into the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. And that cleanup was slow and, in fact, is still going on as we speak.
The next step on this pipeline?
Yeah, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission is expected to talk about this proposal or this recommendation to replace that pipeline at their next meeting in December.
Quite a ways off. Noah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
It's Noah Ovchinsky, our news guy on Central Time, officially assistant news director at WPR, joins us each Friday at this time to round up the top state news stories of the week.